Welcome to the Connects Benefit Connection podcast number 11. Today we'll be talking about prior authorization, specifically why simplify prior authorization. And this is a bit of a presentation preview for our upcoming November 26th Benefits Breakfast Club session. My name is Denise Balsh and I'm the president of Connects Health, and I'll be the host and also a bit of a participant for this particular podcast. Today, we'll be discussing prior authorization with Bev Herzig, pharmacist and director at the Pangea Group. Bev worked as a community pharmacist and then as a long-term care pharmacist over the first couple of decades of her career and has been a director at the Pangea Group for the last 10 years. Bev's expertise extends across a broad variety of topics important to the pharmaceutical industry, pharmacy, patients and payers, including biologics and biosimilars. Bev's work focuses on helping clients integrate landscape knowledge to enable better decision-making in the context of our evolving healthcare landscape. And as I mentioned earlier, today we'll be discussing prior authorization and touching on some of the important issues around prior auth that we'll be addressing in further detail at the upcoming BBC session. But before we get into that, I'd like to ask Bev to explain how she came to leave community pharmacy and join the Pangea Group.
Well, thanks, Denise. It's a good question. There's a little story behind it. The truth of it is that I really did enjoy working as a pharmacist. I was one of those people who was very satisfied by developing relationships with patients and doing what I knew to be the good work of pharmacy. It was actually kind of hard for me to leave that work. But I guess on the other side of it, I had been doing it for well over 20 years. I was, you know, a bit fatigued. I was thinking, is this what I'll be doing till I retire? Many pharmacists do, and many of them love it. But anyway, through a series of events, I happened to meet up with Joe Knott, who is the owner of the Pangea Group. And right around that time, Bill 102 was tabled in Ontario. And for those of you who are too young to remember or too young to even know, and others who have forgotten, Bill 102 is really that bill that the Ontario government brought into place. I think it was back in, it would have been around 2000, that took a big slice out of generic pricing and also removed the payment of rebates or professional allowances from the generic industry into pharmacy. So this was coming, and it was clearly going to foundationally change the business model for pharmacy. And I thought, you know, maybe this is a time to make the move, and the opportunity came up. And so I did join the consulting firm. And, you know, at the time, I'll say it was a very steep learning curve for me. My training was as a pharmacist, but I do have a lot of curiosity, and I was, you know, interested to learn. And my goodness, I have to say that it really did open my eyes up to that bigger ecosystem of which pharmacy is a part. And so, it's very interesting work because it covers a lot of different areas within pharmacy and the pharmaceutical industry. So I've come to really, really enjoy it very much.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting observation, and I come at it kind of from the opposite side, because my background for 30-odd years has been employee benefits. And when in actually 2000 I launched my own consulting business, it was really with a view to a burgeoning interest in some of the other aspects that were impacting healthcare in Canada, both on the public and private side, but also some of the other stakeholders that go to delivering private healthcare and funding that and creating solutions. So we kind of come at it from different angles, but both with curiosity. I think that's one thing, having worked together over the last number of months, that's one thing that we definitely share in common.
For sure.
Today, what we're here to talk about is prior authorization. And it's been in the news recently, but before we get into the recent news announcement last week, the press release from TELUS, Canada Life and Innomar, I'd like to ask what you'd like to share about the reasons behind the white paper research that we'll be talking a little bit more about next week.
Well, it's a great question. And I think, you know, even in our own research, we heard directly from some of our interviewees that when prior authorization really began, it was, applied to a few molecules, and the intent was to address high-cost medications. Now, you and I and everybody listening, I'm sure, is aware that we're in a time now where we've got more and more very high-cost and very niche and personalized medicines coming to the market. So in a really relatively short time, prior authorization has grown phenomenally to manage the high cost use or the use, pardon me, of high cost medications. And I think it's evolved even beyond that now. And to some degree, it's being utilized to manage prescribing. And so it's become a bit of a bigger beast than perhaps was initially intended. And I think it kind of grew organically, perhaps without, you know, a clear set of objectives and maybe guiding principles behind it at the outset. And ultimately, what's happening here is that prior authorization, however it's evolved to be what it is today, is having significant impact in a couple of places. So one of them being in the front lines where care is being administered either by physicians or pharmacists or others involved in that circle of care who need to meet the requirements of prior authorization. And it's also having significant impact, we heard very clearly, on patients themselves who perhaps without understanding all the reasons for prior authorization are left to see it as something that's an additional barrier to a treatment that's been prescribed for them, and sometimes are subject to significant delays in treatment because of the processes that have to happen behind it. And all that said, one of the other things about prior authorization is that the way it's set up today is quite inefficient. And that affects everybody, including those who are implementing prior authorization. So, you know, there's room here to do some work to improve this within our ecosystem for sure.
Thanks, Bev. Yes, probably should have done a little bit of a background before we got into this. This is a white paper, if people are not already aware, that you and I worked on collaboratively. I think the background that we have complemented each other very nicely. And I think we went into this with some understanding of the complications of the process. That's why we were hired to do the paper in the first place. And we were hired by Amgen Canada to really look at the prior authorization process and where there were opportunities for improvement to really serve the best needs of patients. But going into it was nothing like what happened once we got into it. And I think once we got into it, there were a whole bunch of additional learnings, I think, that both of us had, and there were quite a few aha moments. Would you agree?
Oh, I have to agree with you. And you know, what came as we worked through it, what became clear were some real commonalities across different stakeholders in the landscape when it came to prior authorization. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think there were more commonalities than not. So it's
true.
It really, we'll talk about what that really led to as we move forward in our discussion today. So Bev, next I wanted to move over. I have a note here that I know you've seen that we wanted to talk about the research more specifically that we conducted in partnership between our two firms. The complexities in prior authorization, we knew something about them, but we didn't appreciate all of those complexities. And once those became clear, I think moving to the next step where we were talking about what the opportunities, because the white paper, when people do see the white paper, if they choose to download it, what we have things broken down into is challenges and opportunities kind of for each of the issues that we're addressing in the white paper. But those opportunities, they became clear pretty quickly, didn't they? Once we sort of identified in more detail what the challenges were, and the whole thing became kind of much easier. It almost took on a life of its own. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure. Indeed, those opportunities did become quite obvious going through this. And what was interesting to me was that we heard very common messages from all of the stakeholders, you know, sometimes with different levels of priority, but including from insurers that the system is inefficient, that there's uncertainty about whether it's actually achieving the objectives that it was intended to achieve. And really what we came to, or where we landed, was that the whole process really needs to be based in a set of clear objectives. What are we looking to achieve through prior authorization? How do we make it more efficient and more patient-centric? And, you know, some of the, just one example of some of the messaging that we heard very loud and clear was about the transparency or lack thereof in the prior authorization system. And I couldn't help myself as we were going through this thinking, you know, I can order a pizza at Domino's and on my device, I can know when it's going in the oven. I can know when it's being quality checked. I can know when it's in the car and when it's at my door. Those messages come in. And yet patients who are in some cases very, very sick, looking for life-changing or life-saving therapies, have their clinicians complete an application for prior authorization. And then there's a real challenge to know where is that application at? What are the steps in the process, and when will I know whether or not I'm actually going to have access to this medication that my clinician feels is the right treatment for me? That has to be something that we can fix. And I think as a collective, what you and I heard is everybody's aligned that needs to be improved. And so that was, I think, really reassuring for us as we went through the process.
Yes, and I think even more so because we were told by a couple of payers specifically that they were already looking at their own prior authorization process and ways to make it more efficient. So
absolutely,
it was one of
right.
the things that yeah. really, yeah, that one, it was one of the things that really goaded us on, as it were. So one of the things that people might be asking themselves about as they listen to us talk here today is that, you know, and they may have seen in the industry, we announced the Simply Prior Authorization Initiative. We've got all our branding and all that kind of good stuff that people are going to be seeing next week. And we announced that at the same time that the white paper was released. In fact, we even have branding in the white paper. So can you talk to us a little bit about why we made that decision?
Sure. Sure. It's a good question. And I think, you know, we've talked to this a little bit already, that the challenges and the opportunity to make things better became clear and actually was consistent across everyone that we spoke to. But beyond that, we actually then reached out and spoke to a number of experts, key opinion leaders, and key stakeholders in the landscape who are very close and familiar to prior authorization. And what we heard was that our approach was good, that it was smart, that it was holistic. We felt a lot of support from those that we were talking to around how to go forward on the process, and really acknowledging that this was a bit of a lofty goal to try to bring about a holistic solution, one that would be bounded in solid guiding principles and require some independent oversight, hold people to a set of standards. You know, we knew that this would be a lofty goal, but we really couldn't see any reason to wait. We felt compelled by what we heard and what we learned from the research. And along the way, we certainly saw some support from the pharmaceutical industry who supported the work and the effort for us to undertake this work to secure a multi-stakeholder group who would come to the table and collaborate with us on these solutions.
And I think that's, you've touched on an important point there, because people may be wondering, because I did mention at the outset that the initial support for the research was from Amgen Canada, which everybody will know is a pharmaceutical company. And since then, we have gathered some additional financial support from a number of pharmaceutical companies and manufacturers that operate in Canada. But I think that it's really important to stress that, as you mentioned, the objective is for this to be a multi-stakeholder initiative that will have benefits right across the landscape. So this is now no longer an Amgen initiative. This is a Kinnex Pangea initiative that we've been fortunate enough to be provided with some seed money from pharma to get started on sort of the to act on the recommendations of the white paper, but that what we've recommended in that white paper is that this initiative should be not only funded by a cross-industry, multi-stakeholder collective, but that it also should be developed and it should find its legs through that process. So I know you've said it a couple of times, but I just wanted to make it really clear that this is not a pharma project. We've got some seed money to get started. This is a multi-stakeholder initiative that's really for the benefit of the industry and for the benefit specifically of patients to really address some of the opportunities and take advantage of them to improve the prior authorization process for really everybody, but particularly for patients.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the other beneficiary here will be the insurance industry itself, because the systems that we're, or the solutions we're proposing here, of course, will bring about phenomenal efficiencies and much better, more competitive offering in the landscape. So, yeah, you're right. Everybody, if this is done properly, everybody will benefit.
Yes. And I think that's an important point you've touched on, because from an insurer perspective, that was kind of the one thing that when we talked to our key opinion leaders and our experts after we completed the white paper, one of the things that they said was, you know, if you're going to engage insurance companies in this process, which is obviously you have to do, that's a must, then what's in it for them? And I think the two things we'll be talking more about next week is that really we're looking at efficiencies. And anytime, you know, an insurance company can improve their efficiency level on their administration side, I think it's a big plus for them, and it's a big plus for their clients, who of course will benefit from lower administration fees. So I think improving that administration, which is very heavily manually based right now on prior authorization, is a key, but also setting up those best practice guidelines. I think that's kind of like the good housekeeping seal of prior authorization, and having that independent oversight agency that can help manage the overall prior authorization environment without impeding on the payers or the insurers' proprietary aspect of claims adjudication. I think that should be attractive and be of benefit to payers as well.
Totally, totally agree. Yep.
So before we all take off this morning, as we're recording this about a week or so before the Breakfast Club meeting, we have to address the elephant in the room. And we announced the white paper and this initiative towards the end of the first week in November. And then the beginning of the second week of November, which was just last week as we're speaking today, there was a press release from TELUS Canada Life and Innomar about their pilot in prior authorization. From the press release, and we don't know a lot about it right now, but it seems like the two initiatives are taking a very different approach. And we've been asked actually by a few stakeholders, well, you know, is this good for what you're doing or not? So maybe you can touch on, make some comments on that.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, the timing was interesting for sure. It was like, oh, look at somebody else is looking at this. And I have to say that that was a real validation of our findings, right? And I think one of the things in that press release that is shared is that, you know, innovation is driven by necessity. And so certainly, that's exactly what we found from our work, that something here has to change. So, you know, clearly the entire landscape, the whole ecosystem is seeing that there are issues with prior authorization. I would say they go beyond just the fact that prior authorization is manual and that it should be electronic. Totally agree with the press release from TELUS and Canada Life in Innomar that, you know, piloting an e-prior authorization, making it electronic, is the way to go. That's our plan, is to also make it an electronic-based process. I think that we're looking to take it a little bit further than that and sort of set some of these, you know, we've alluded to them already in our discussion, set some of the guiding principles, have some standards or best practices that we that we ask the landscape to agree upon and meet, and then have some independent oversight so that we actually, you know, hold people to those standards. This is really, I think, the best way to ensure that we actually do change how prior authorization is being handled in the country. So the approaches are a little bit different, but there's no question that the timing and that pilot is a total validation of what we found. And, you know, this is a competitive landscape. So it's likely that others in the landscape who are looking for solutions will be intrigued by, well, we know already that there's interest in the process and the procedures that we propose here. And ultimately, we want to make this system better for everybody, but also one that is patient-centric and keeps the needs of our patients and our plan sponsors, employees, keeps those front and center going forward.
Absolutely, Bev. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, you know, it's really something that you and I have been deeply embedded in for the last number of months. So sometimes you kind of have to take your head out of the water and just and step back a little bit. And I think we've tried to do that on a fairly regular basis, and certainly connecting with some of the industry leaders on this area, I think, has helped us a lot. We know that people have looked at trying to simplify the prior authorization process in the past and haven't been successful. We know there's been a lot of work done on the states, and interestingly, the not-for-profit oversight model has worked well in the states. So I think that I think we're on the right path. I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing our alliance together with the Connects and the Pangaea group, and interested in engaging, you know, some of the folks that we've already spoken to, and also some new partners, and really heading down a path that maybe not so frequently traveled. But it was funny, I came across a quote, and it's actually in the white paper. Then, you know, people have said to us, well, this is a pretty big objective, pretty big goal. And we go, yep, it is, as you've mentioned. But Nelson Mandela once said, it always seems impossible until it is done. So true. I think that's a good mantra to go by. And we certainly welcome input, comments back on the white paper. And people will be able to learn more about this particular initiative, not only at the Breakfast Club next week, but there is a comprehensive communication strategy that is currently being developed around this initiative. So there will be articles, future podcasts, and folks will be able to download the white paper. We're actually developing our microsite right now under simplifyprioroth.ca. That will be launching in December. And our goal really is to keep the benefits industry and plan sponsors well informed through that microsite and the press releases, articles, presentations, and podcasts like this as we move forward. And of course, if anybody would like to contact us directly, we're more than happy to kind of give them some updates. Bev, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to putting the finishing touches on our presentation for next week, and developing dialogue with those folks that will be on our session next week, and continuing our work on the Simply Prior Authorization Initiative. So for those of you that would like to learn more and register for next week's Benefits Breakfast Club session, where we'll be taking a deeper dive on the impact of prior authorization, particularly we'll be looking at some new developments in cancer, with Dr. Mark Vincent, who's a medical oncologist at London Health Sciences Center. He faces prior authorization challenges lots with some of the new oral and immunotherapies that are available to cancer patients that aren't yet covered publicly. So he'll be speaking to some of his challenges, meeting his patients' needs. And also Alan Birch, who's a drug access facilitator at the Cancer Care Program at North York General Hospital, and the founder of Drug Access Canada. You can find out more about Drug Access Canada at drugaccess.ca. And you can register for next week's morning session through the link at connectshc.com, our website. And certainly feel free to contact Bev and myself with any further questions or comments you have. Thanks for tuning into this podcast, and we look forward to hopefully seeing many of you next week at the Benefits Breakfast Club session, our webinar. Thank you.
Thanks, Denise.